This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
I think I'm going to take this off. Is it possible to have it? Can I take it off? Does it come off? I think we should take it off.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You know, we the Muslims believe that the Quran have all the solutions to all of our problems, and that the Quran is the best form of guidance. So when we talk about homosexuality, the practice of it or the belief of it, or when we talk about feminism, or when we talk about liberalism, in a sense, the Quran has dealt with all of those topics. And this actually affirms the timeless moral nature of the Quran al-Kareem. For example, I was pondering over some verses in the Quran in Surah Al-A'raf. And it's very, very interesting because when the prophets came to the people, they all came and they said, they called them to Tawheed. مَا مِنْ إِلَهٍ غَيْرُهُ. That there's no God except for him, i.e. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then, for example, وَمَدْيَنْ إِذْ قَالَ لِقَوْمِهِ, for example, or ثَمُود. But then when it came to Lut alayhi salam, he didn't actually tell the people to worship Allah. It's a very interesting situation here. He's the only one. This is something you can check. Go on Surah Al-A'raf, and you'll see all of the prophets said, مَا مِنْ إِلَهٍ غَيْرُ. They said, only worship Allah, there's no other God except for him. But Lut alayhi salam, when he came to his people, that wasn't the first thing he said to them. He said to them the following, وَلُوطًا إِذْ قَالَ لِقَوْمِهِ أَتَأْتُونَ الْفَاحِشَةَ مَا سَبَقَكُمْ بِهَا مِنْ أَحَدٍ مِنَ الْعَالَمِينَ. This is in chapter 7, verse 80, Surah Al-A'raf. The first thing Lot said to his people, according to the Quran, is, are you approaching the people with something that nobody before you has done? إِنَّكُمْ لَتَأْتُونَ الرِّجَالَ شَهْوَةً مِنْ دُونِ النِّسَاءِ بَلْ أَنْتُمْ قَوْمٌ مُسْرِفُونَ. The first thing he challenged them on was this. Homosexual practices. He says, you are approaching men in a desirous way, in opposition to or other than women. You are a people who transgress all bounds. It's very interesting, the phraseology, and we'll come back to it. How did they respond to him? Because all of this is so interesting. Allah has placed it in the Quran for a reason, so that we can read this as people of the 21st century and take lessons from this. There's no doubt about that. وَمَا كَانَ جَوَابَ قَوْمِهِ إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا. It wasn't the case that his qawm, his people responded to him, except that they said, أَخْرِجُوهُمْ مِنْ قَرْيَتِكُمْ إِنَّهُمْ أُنَاسٌ يَتَطَّهَرُونَ. Remove them from your town. They are a people who seek purification. Now, let's take it one step back. Let's really analyze these words for a second. Very interesting. The first thing is, Lot challenged his people. He said to them, you are a people who prefer women, men over women. In shahwa, he made it very clear. Shahwa means desire. And then he said the following. He said, you are qawmun musrifun. Musrifun means you go overboard. You're going too much now. Now, I was thinking about this tail end of the ayah for many years, actually. And this is not a tafsir. This is tadabbur. I want to just explain what I've been thinking about. You see, in psychology, there is something called replacement theory. Some people call it Romeo and Juliet theory. Very interesting. Especially when it comes to love and sexuality. If you continually tell someone not to do something, sometimes it makes it more desirable for them. And if you say, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, and it's in a sexual context, sometimes it can make them want to do it more. This is the case. This ayah is very interesting because it's not really saying, don't do that in that manner. It's saying you're going overboard now. Very interesting. So it doesn't activate that psychological response that someone, it could be argued, could get from that. And obviously in the other part of the other interaction with them, Lut said, "Ha'ula'i banati." These are my daughters. Effectively, that's the translation. You can marry them. But this daughters, is it the daughters of the village? Is it the daughters? This is a discussion among the scholars. The point is, he gave them an alternative. Because sexuality requires an alternative. Sexuality is like a wave. If you stand in front of it, it can swallow you, engulf your life. Sexuality is not something you can try and stop like this. No matter how loudly you shout or what you do, it's something you need to redirect. So we go back. This tail end of the ayah is very interesting. But what is even for me more interesting from a sociological perspective is the response of his people. وَمَا كَانَ جَوَابَ قَوْمِهِ إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا. They only said one thing to him. They didn't care about, they don't want to argue with him. They don't care about قُلْ هَاتُوا بُرْهَانَكُمْ, bring your evidences, and they want to argue with you and debate with you. They don't care about all of that, to be honest with you. They're not interested. They only said one thing. Get them out of your city. And it's so interesting, the pronouns here. Get them out of your town. But aren't they all living in the same town? If you want to put it in modern parlance, aren't they all citizens of the same country? Get them out of your country. Because these ones, they want to purify themselves, which indicates they're not interested in purification, effectively. They don't care about purifying themselves, these particular ones. In the Quran, they don't care about purifying themselves. That is, it shows you why he didn't start with Tawheed with them. Because they were fundamentally insincere. He had to break the idol. He had to make sure La ilaha was there before he could put Illallah. That they were so entrenched into their own desires that it was clouding any kind of rational discussion. They were not interested in discussion. They were not interested in truth. So if he had said to them, believe in Allah, this would have been too much of an obstacle. So my pondering over the verse is perhaps their desires were so strong that they needed to be deconstructed first. And the response is, get them out of your country. And you'll see how quickly you'll turn from South Africans to Indians when they enact laws. And put this on the record and remember what I said. When they enact laws of hate speech and anti-discrimination laws. When you start speaking about anti-LGBT practices and so on, they say if you do that, they'll copy the West, monkey see, monkey do. This is what South Africa's gonna happen. Just anything you wanna predict, you can predict this. You'll see how quickly you go from this country, wherever, to your original country where you get them out of your city. This country is a liberal country. This country is about tolerance and inclusion. And if you're not interested in that, then leave. This is what they'll say, go back to your country. And this is already what we're seeing in the West. This country, and they do that in institutions. Your child has to learn this information. Your child must learn inclusion and tolerance and fundamental British or American values. Your child must learn this syllabus. This is undoubtedly exactly what Lut faced, we are facing. But imagine, he was like one person. And he had a small group of family members. And Allah still saved him, except for his wife. كانت من الغابرين. She sided with those, actually. And this actually teaches us another lesson, which is that we're going to lose people in this war. If a prophet of Allah, Lut alayhi salam, lost his wife in this ideological war, there's no doubt that we are going to lose people in this war. But we need to march ahead. And this was probably more than 3,000 to 4,000 years ago. And Allah describes her as a khaina. كانت تحت عبدين من عبادنا فخانتاهما. لوط وضرب الله مثلا امرأة لوط امرأة نوح وامرأة لوط كانت تحت عبدين من عبادنا فخانتاهما. The two wives of Noah and Lot, they were underneath two of our slaves and they betrayed them. We will find people in our community who exist now who will also betray us. So we have to prepare for that. Who will side with the dominant ethic. Allah is psychologically priming and preparing us, showing us that even our family members, some of them, we will lose them in the ranks. Everything is perfect in the Quran. It's telling us exactly what to do in this situation. The guidance is there. We offer alternatives. But Lot, despite the fact that he was one person with small number of family members, he still fought against this situation. He said, لو أن بي قوة أو أوي إلى ركن شديد. If I had the power, I would change the situation. Now we are finding people, Muslim people in leadership positions who do not have the fortitude and do not have the strength, and they should be removed from their leadership position, who effectively accept or acquiesce or be quiet to the fact of this immorality. All over the West we have seen it and they have been exposed. Some of them, big figures. And it took years and years to be stern in speech about this practice. In the same way like Lot was. Which is a huge humiliation for them. And they've lost all of their credibility. Lot alayhi salam and the prophets of Allah have given us the answers. The answer is, you're going to give dawah. And the dawah with homosexuality starts with the discussion of the elephant in the room. We're going to start with your homosexuality. We're going to start with this. That's how we're going to start this dawah with homosexuality. With homosexuals. That's how I start with it. I don't start with tawheed. This is the only group because the Quran kind of taught me this. And if we can, because this will be too big an objection for them. It's too big. We have to deal with it first. And we will ask them the following. How can you prove your position? The Quran, in no less than 3 different places, asks a rhetorical question. Or asks a normal question, which is, قُلْ هَاتُوا بُرْهَانَكُمْ إِن كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ. Well, it's actually a proposition. Bring your evidences if you are truthful. What is the argument of the homosexual? The argument of the homosexual is that we're not doing anything wrong. Because you can do whatever you like, really, so long as you're not harming anybody else. This comes from a liberal ethic. You can do whatever you like, so long as you're not harming anyone else. It's called the harm principle. This is what they say. So we ask them, I mean, is this really the case? Because last time I saw it was LGBTQ. I didn't find it LGBTQI for incest. Because incest, you can do, why not? A brother and another brother. Two gay brothers, how about that? I'm not even going to say sister. So do you discriminate against those gays? What can they say about this? Why haven't you included those? I've asked many of them that question. Some of them said, you know what, you have a point. I was like, but the injustice has already been done. The injustice has already been, according to you. I asked another one, do you know, he said to me, he said, it's not natural. I said, really, you're telling me? I said, you're going to use an argument that is natural or not natural? He says, what's your evidence against? I said, why am I going to tell you the evidence against? You're the one saying it's okay. You're the one telling me that you can do whatever you want so long as you don't harm anyone else. Isn't that a statement of truth? Aren't you making a truth statement here? Okay, tell me why that's true. That you can do whatever you want so long as you don't harm anyone else. Oh, we this and that and we don't have evidence. And John Stuart Mill had an entire book who was the father of social liberalism. He had a whole book trying to prove what you call the harm principle and he failed miserably. He says, you hear things, because you hear them. You see things because you see them, and you desire things because you desire them. It's a circular argument. It had no veracity whatsoever. It was humiliating. Even other philosophers rejected it. But for the sake of argument, let's go with it. Okay, fine. Let's, for the sake of argument. Is it really true that you're not harming anyone else? Because last time I checked, a homosexual person was anything between 10 to 20 times more likely to carry sexually transmitted diseases. And sexually transmitted diseases can be spread in more than one way. Not just sex. It can be done through blood or saliva or this or that. I'm not talking just about AIDS. Although even that is 10 to 20 times more. So you're affecting everyone by doing this, actually. You're spreading diseases. You are effectively spreading, you're exacerbating the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. Someone will say, you know, in the Quran it states, فَأَمْطَرْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ مَطَرًا. That particular Sodom and Gomorrah, or whatever you want to call them, the people of Lut in the Quran, Qawm Lut, that there was a punishment inflicted upon them, and it wasn't just homosexuality. It was, إِنَّكُمْ لَتَأْتُونَ الرِّجَالِ وَتَقَطَعُونَ السَّبِيلِ وَتَأْتُونَ فِي نَادِيكُمُ الْمُنْكَرِ. There was more than one reason. It's mentioned in Surah Al-Ankabut. That you are cutting the roads, you're doing homosexual actions, and you are doing munkar, evil actions. So there was a collection of actions. Of course, they didn't even believe in Allah. But where is the matar from Hijara on all these things? Well, the Prophet told us, actually. He said, in the future, people will be committing sexually lewd actions, and we will invent for them new diseases that were never affected before. Yani, if you really consider it, I would rather, many people would rather die instantly through rocks coming from the sky than a slow disease which degenerates you over a span of time. It's a slow and painful death. And you look at your private genetic warts, and blood is coming out of your rectum, sorry to say. And I don't know what's coming out of your mouth and this and that. This is a slow and painful reality. Is this not a punishment? Could this not be a punishment? Of course it could be, from the Islamic perspective. Of course it could be. وَبَلَوْنَاهُمْ بِالْحَسَنَاتِ وَالسَّيِّئَاتِ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَرْجَعُونَ. And we have tried them with good things and bad things. Maybe they'll come back. Maybe they'll come back. The point I'm making is, even if we go with the harm principle, that you can do whatever you want so long as you don't harm anyone else, there is no guarantee that you're not going to harm anyone else. In fact, there's more of a chance on probability that you will harm somebody else. But is that the only harm? We know there are other forms of harm. We know that families with two partners, with almost all the studies that have done on this, families with two partners are more likely to, the children in that family are more likely to what? To be delinquent, to have a lower educational attainment. They are more likely to be criminal. They are more likely to have psychological pathology. Do you know what's really interesting? When you have two women, and they are the two so-called mothers, somehow, I don't know how, but let's just say, they are the two so-called mothers, and they're in a relationship. Domestic violence, according to their statistics, is highest or very, very high in this category of lesbianism. Why? Because there's the power balance has been disturbed. I mean, I'm sure many, put your hands up if you're married. There's many married people. I'm married as well. And I've had my disagreements with my wife in my time. I've been married for 11 years. But I don't recall the last time my wife, out of anger and frustration, challenged me to a fight. Not only that, hopefully the men in this audience have the same experience. Because it's a disadvantage, even the size, bone, this, that, testosterone. This is not fair. She might call her parents. She might go to her friends. She might give me the stonewalling me and giving me the cold shoulder. But Last time I found that she was actually trying to assault me was never. But when you have two women of a similar size and stature, and they fight each other, now imagine it's very similar weight and strength and size. And the neighbors, especially in Western countries, they don't want to get involved because they're all making these noises. They think maybe something is happening. But she's screaming, she's saying, stop. This is homophobia, stop it. Leave them. Leave them to do whatever they want to. We're living in a liberal world. And they're screaming and pulling and the blood. And then one of them is coming out. And then one of them emerges, the masculine one, by the way. The one who wins the fight. She's the one who gets the special treatment at the barber. She says, shave the head. Maybe she read the Bible. Maybe she saw Ahmed Didat say, Paul is telling you. He said, okay, Paul, take it off. Take it off, Paul. And she comes and she's walking. Have you not seen? This is the situation. So don't tell me it doesn't create harm. It creates all kinds of harm, my friend. Even as small as an example, as if you have two men, where's the breast milk going to come from? Unless they go that far. In which case, this is a new thing, which we could talk about. LGBTIP, which we all know what the P stands for. You don't know what the P stands for? You do, don't you? And they accuse our prophet. But you know, what's interesting about that is that the LGBTQ situation is connected to transgender ideology. And transgender ideology is effectively the following. It is effectively what psychologists refer to as psychosis. This is it. Because psychosis is officially when you lose touch with reality. This is an official definition. There was a time, there was people in my family that went to the mental asylum. I don't know what you call it here. The mental hospital, basically for the insane or for people who are mentally challenged. I don't know what you guys call it here. Is this correct? Is this politically correct? I'm not sure, yeah? Even if it isn't, I don't care. You know, I'm only saying. Anyway, I remember very clearly, person came out in the morning and he said, and he was walking like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Put his head up. He goes, I am half man, half robot. And then the three Nigerians, big ones, they came, grabbed him and they put some medicines in him. I don't know what it was. They tried to sedate him. But in the mental hospital, you put the medicine in him. But in the university, you give him a prize. And you attack those who go against him. I don't understand it. I think that there's going to be a time in history. Just like now, the Western white man. He looks at the ancient Greeks. He looks at Athens, Athena, Zeus, Hercules. He says, look at these people. They used to believe in Zeus and Hercules and these ones. He says, look at these fictions that they used to believe in. But I am proposing that Hercules is more real than the proposition that an XXY chromosome is XY. Because at least in the case of the former, you cannot really falsify the existence of Hercules. Because it's not empirically. You cannot put Hercules under a microscope. He's a fake figure. But you can easily falsify the idea that XX is XY and XY is XY. 100 years from now, the whites will be making fun of these whites here with this transgender ideology. Barry and John are going to have a discussion. He's going to say, 100 years ago, these guys used to say that, the XX used to say the XY and the male used to say the female. I mean, look at these stupid people. What kind of myth did they believe in? The anti-science community. That's what they're talking about. Anti-science community. And the truth of the matter is, if you push this forward, think of what the implications of this is. This has serious implications. If you're saying biological, that biology doesn't matter effectively, like you can invent your own you know, you can invent your own pronoun, or you can say whatever you like. Then, in, let's say, in the South African context, 29 years ago, there was apartheid, yes? It's unbelievable, really, 29 years ago, in effectively a country that is influenced by the West, you know, there's apartheid. Shocking, you know, racism and all this. But according to the transgender ideology, just like sex is a social construct, so too then must be race a social construct. Then if race is a social construct, guess what? So is racism. So you can see how this can lead to a new racism. You'll see a black guy, or let's say a white guy, say he's black. So white guy, say I'm black. There's no racism. I'm black myself. I identify as black. And he was the one who he was doing the punishment. His father was part of the government or something, and he was doing. He said, "I identify as black. Are you going against my identification?" And so you see, racism can be eliminated. I was one time in an elevator. I was doing gender studies on a postgraduate level in one of the universities, London, left-wing university. And the woman, just out of nowhere, she said, you know, the penis is a social construct. Now, I just wanted to have a one-liner. I know Muhammad Khan likes one-liners. Where is he? I wanted to have a one-liner because, you know, the elevator is going to go quickly. And I thought of some very, astaghfirullah, bad ones, which I can't repeat because the sisters are listening. She said that the penis is a social construct. So what am I going to say? I say, look, shall I show you that it's not? I mean, I can prove to you as a matter of fact that it's not. That's obviously haram. I didn't say this. So what I did say was, the following. I said, if you say the penis is a social construct, then guess what? So is rape. Because isn't rape a penetrative act with a penis into vagina? And she just stood there. I said, by the way, I don't believe rape is a social construct. And I left. Just to make sure that she understood the point. If you want to eliminate the science from the scientific, from this discourse, from the male. And you know, the whole transgender ideology is defeated in one line of the Quran. وَلَيْسَ الذَّكَرُ كَالْأُنْثَى. The male is not the same as the female. Can you imagine? One, it's not even an ayah. It doesn't deserve too much recognition. وَلَيْسَ الذَّكَرُ كَالْأُنْثَى. The male is not the same as the female. Let's move on. Because it's self-evident. So self-evident to those Nigerians that put the chemicals into that person in the mental hospital. So self-evident to all these civilizations which existed for hundreds of thousands of years. So self-evident to doctors who have to perform surgeries on the basis of the different, you know, reproductive things in both men and women. It's self-evident. So transgender ideology is not a threat. It's a threat only onto themselves. I mean, consider the following point. If I said to you, look, I'm 50 years old. Now, I know most of you believe this. I'm not 50 years old. But is there any way of you disproving this statement? I mean, can you cut my belly from this and see like a tree how many circles are inside me? What is the proof of how old I am? It's testimonial evidence. Only I tell you and then you have to believe it. There was no one there with any of you for each second of your life with a camera that's going to put it on YouTube every second of your life. A 31-year long video. It doesn't exist. But if you're allowing genders to identify in whatever way they like, then surely you should allow people to identify with whatever age they like. But you can see the problem already. The problem is, then I identify as a child. Why can't I go into a primary school and sit down and say I identify as 13 or 12 or 10 or whatever? I mean, it's this age discrimination. No, you really have to justify to me if you're allowing this. If you're allowing gender to be identified in whatever way you like, then why can't I just say and mean it full well that age is just a number? And it's a socially constructed number. Because quite frankly, there's more evidence of my gender than there is of my age. Take my blood and see the X's and the Y's. Considering my stature, I think there'll be double X's and Y's. As the woman on the lift was going to find out. She wasn't Muslim. So I'd have to convert her first. And by the way, I didn't want to anyway. Just in case she's watching this. She thinks, oh, maybe you like, no, I don't know. Sorry, it's just a joke. Just a joke. But you can find out X, Y, but you can't find out how old I am through my blood. You can do an estimation. So if there's more science on the side of my gender than my sex than there is on my age. And yet you allow one and not the other. This is where the slippery slope. This is the slippery slope. So transgender ideology leads to real life paedophilia. When we talk about paedophilia here, we're talking about prepubescence. A pubescent can actually identify as a prepubescent. Should be. Why not? And a prepubescent can identify as a pubescent. Why not? We're not talking just about ages. Why not? A black man can identify as a white and a white can identify as a black. Therefore, racism is gone. There is no racism because race is a social construct. To defeat the transgender ideology, it is not necessarily by using facts. It's by showing the logical absurdities that come about by the implications, the practical implications of believing what they believe, and how it's an affront to what they believe elsewhere through liberalism and human rights. It is an affront to their own version of human rights, not just to our religion. Which leaves us with feminism. We leave the least for last. See, they say last but not least. But I say least and least. Least and last, which is feminism. And the Quran deals with feminism just like it deals with liberalism. In so much as the Quran says about liberalism, not obviously the official ideology, but its assumption, which is referred to as the hedonistic principle. أَفَرَأَيْتَ مَنِ اتَّخَذَ إِلَهُ Have you seen the one who has taken his own desires as God? The hedonistic principle is effectively you do whatever you gives you pleasure. And then of course they put the harm principle there so long as you don't harm anyone else. These two things are liberalism, social liberalism. Hedonistic principle, harm principle. And if you want to add one more thing, the utilitarian principle, as many good for as many people. That's it. So we're trying to maximize the pleasure of as many people as possible. That's basically what liberalism is. And without harm. That's it. Hedonistic principle. The Quran asks you the question, have you seen the one who has taken his own desires as God? So can you see, subhanAllah, the Quran is dealing with each and every single one of these ideologies, or at least assumptions of each and every single one of them. The Quran deals with liberalism before I get to feminism in one other way, which I thought about and I done tadabbar of, and it's very interesting. The following. Allah has created the universe, right? He's created the universe with an incredible itqan, precision. Now someone will say how. Say, look, the universe is finely tuned in some way. You don't want to believe that? Fine. It's regular. It's stable. It is uniform and it allows life to exist. You cannot deny this. Allah says, وَلَوْ اتَّبَعَ الْحَقَّ أَهْوَاءَهُمْ لَفَسَدَتِ السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضُ وَمَنْ فِيهِنْ In Surah Al-Mu'minun, chapter 23. That if the truth had followed their desires, everything in the universe would have been destroyed. Meaning what? Meaning the truth must be based on consistent measures. The truth must be based on consistent measures. For example, this building that we are in right now, the architect that engineered or drew the initial plans for this building had to use mathematics. You cannot be an architect without being good at maths. You cannot be an engineer without being good at mathematics. Or at least know it. And many engineers are in this room and they know what I'm talking about. So you have to have precise, symmetrical, this and that, whatever, calculations. If it's not in place, then what would happen is that this ceiling would be destroyed, destroy us all, it would be crumbled underneath it. Like a house of cards, it will just fall down. Like a house of cards. Or like dominoes. Allah is telling us the universe is done with precision. You can see it, you're living in it, هل ترى من فطور? Do you see any gaps in it? He's asking us questions. Allah is asking us. And then he said that if the universe had been, or if the truth had been connected to their desires, which is volatile, one day they're happy, one day they're sad, one day they're angry, one day they're this, one day they're that, the whole universe would have been destroyed. Meaning what? Liberalism itself, it's a volatile measure and it doesn't have any truth value inside of it. The idea of the hedonistic principle, following your own desires, is uncertain and inconsistent. And had the universe been based on that, no one would be alive. It's a very interesting argument. It's showing you the importance of truth to a people who don't care about it. Like we just shown with the LGBT thing, with Lot. They didn't care. They said, أخرجوهم من قريتكم. Bring them out. They didn't want to debate with him. They didn't care about the truth. We're saying there's a bigger elephant in the room. The elephant is you don't care about truth. But had you not cared about truth, and the universe had been based on falsehood, if the universe or the proportions and the constituents and the dimensions of the universe been based on a false, inconsistent and volatile measure, the universe itself would have imploded upon itself. And are you not benefiting from the universe? Are you not breathing the air of the universe? Are you not drinking the water from the universe? Are you not pleasuring yourselves in this universe? So you benefit from a consistent truth. But you ditch it when it comes to morality. This is a double standard. Very interesting. Very interesting. It shows you the importance of truth. And it shows you the psychology of a people who don't care about it. Can you see how deep the Quran is? Dun muhalaja, diagnosis of these issues of the current day. If you just think of it with care. If you just think about the Quran with care, how it just completely diagnoses what's going on. These people don't care about truth. And this is the implication of them not caring about truth. Had the universe proportions been based on their falsehood, then the universe would have been closed. That's why Allah said in the Quran, to Al-Imran, مَا خَلَقَتَ هَذَا بَاطِلًا. You haven't created this universe, heavens and the earth, in falsehood. He created it in truth. Had he created it in falsehood, we wouldn't be able to observe it. They don't care about truth. And with feminism, there's something deeper. And it's very interesting because with these things, we find two things out. How pragmatically their ideologies don't work. How epistemologically they don't contain any truth. And how psychologically people think, or people with these ideologies think. In the case of feminism, it's perfectly captured in Surah Al-Nisa. وَلَا تَتَمَنَّوا. Allah says this, very beautiful, very amazing. Think about it with care. Because people, sometimes we're all comparative creatures, we all compare. Social creatures compare. Allah is saying, وَلَا تَتَمَنَّوا. مَا فَضَّلَ اللَّهُ بِهِ بَعْضُكُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ لِلرِّجَالِ نَصِيبٌ مِمَّا اكْتَسَبُوا وَلِلنِّسَاءِ نَصِيبٌ مِمَّا اكْتَسَبْنَ وَاسْأَلُ اللَّهَ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ. This is so amazing and beautiful. It captures the whole feminist psyche. And it's interesting because the verses before was about inheritance. But it says general verses and it's giving general advice. As the scholars say, الْعَبْرَةُ بِعَمُومِ اللَّهِ لَا بِخُسُسُ فَأْسَرُ. This is generic verses. And there are generic alfaz, which means phrases, which says the following. Do not wish what the other one has. To a man is a portion of what he has earned. And for a woman is a portion of what she has earned. And ask Allah from his bounty. The fact of the matter is, feminism couldn't exist if resentment and embitterment and blaming others didn't exist. Deflection. Feminism is perfect for a resentful person that wants to blame another person for why things are going wrong in their life. You want to blame other people? Say, why does he get to have this and not me? Why does he get to have a career and I'm staying home with the kids? Why does he get to say the final word and I'm the one who has to follow what he has to say? Why does the brother have double what the sister has in inheritance? Why can the man just say talaq, one word, and the whole relationship ceases? And the woman has to go through a formal procedure if she wants to do it from herself. Why can the man marry four wives and the woman cannot marry four husbands? Why isn't it just one and one? Why? You see how many times they ask why? As if we are the interrogated and they are the interrogator. As if we are the defendant and they are the judge. They're not our judge. They're not fit to be our judge. Because the same basic question before we ask why, is one. How can you prove that despite physical, psychological, anatomical, physiological, and psychological differences between men and women, that everything should be the same? Isn't this the assumption of feminism? Let me tell you something. You have bus drivers here, right? Bus drivers. Have you heard of a blind bus driver? If I'm a blind man and I apply for a job as a bus driver and they say no, could I say this is disability discrimination? No. Because they will say, listen, being a bus driver entails that you can see the road. There's a difference between someone who can see and someone who not see. There's an advantage on the side of someone who can see, and this affects the majority of people. Therefore, we're going to suspend your individual right for the collective right. Simple as that. We don't even entertain anything else. We wouldn't even consider it. But then when the feminist in America, she wants to have an equal number of firefighters in the fire brigade in America, in New York, and this is true news. They want to have equal number. So in order to have equal number, you have a person who is slower, that they don't meet the obstacle course requirements, weaker, less brave, and so on. So that people in burning buildings now have to have a second-rate treatment in the name of gender equality. Is it not the same as putting a blind man in a bus? It may not be as extreme, I agree. It might not be as severe. But yet, we can make a case that difference here has caused an effect, a consequence which affects the majority of people. And they're doing it to their own demise. Before they had, for example, in the United Kingdom, it was illegal for a woman to fight in the front line. Illegal by law. Now they've allowed it. You know, this is, for many people in the world who have been oppressed by the British and American armies, good news, actually. I was telling one of my friends, I was speaking to some people, and one of the guys was Iraqi. He's from Iraq. And I was explaining these things, and I saw a smirk on his face, and I realized why he's smirking. Because the truth of the matter is this. Consider the following. The combination of feminism, transgender ideology, and liberalism, it's actually destroying the military capabilities of the Western world. China and Russia and Iran or whatever other country are unlikely to defeat the Western empires. The most likely candidate for the destruction of the Western civilization is the Western civilization itself. Consider the following. If you are told you have a fight tomorrow, okay? Sorry to say, you're gonna have to fight in the courtyard. It's a one-on-one fight. You're gonna get nervous. I would get nervous as well. I know it's hard to believe. Everyone would get nervous. Even Mike Tyson used to get nervous. I don't want to say even, you know. Anyway, anyone would get nervous. But then if I called you up and I said, listen, I have some news about your opponent. He has decided to remove his genitalia. He has done SRS. He has done SRS surgery. He has done SRS surgery. Removed his genitalia. What would that do? Would that fill you up with confidence or fear? Surely it would fill you up with confidence. He's removed his genitalia. He has less testosterone. He's probably in pain. His muscle density has probably gone down dramatically. In fact, his bravery will be affected because testosterone affects bravery. Every single field, he's making himself weaker. Now imagine now, wherever America decides to overtake next, it was Vietnam, it was South Korea, it was Iraq, it was Afghanistan, and of course Afghanistan gave them the middle finger. It was one of the most embarrassing defeats in the history of civilization. But next time the American army decides to land in whatever country it decides to land on, the front line is going to be composed of effectively eunuchs and women. Eunuchs and women. So they're coming down from the helicopter, and you realize one of them has shaved her head because she's the strong one. And her girlfriend is upstairs, you know, getting the bandages ready. And the one who's done the SRS comes down on the rope and it doesn't even hurt him. And they come with their guns.
We're ready now. It's takeover time. We're gonna take you over.
I'm not sure if you've ever seen the difference between the Russian army. There's an advert online, okay, which compares the American army with the Russian army. And the American army military advertisement starts with a lesbian person. Honestly, the rainbow flag and I was always this and inclusivity and all that. And then they juxtaposed it with the Russian. Men shooting this and that from the... Anyone Russian will be looking at this and saying, we've got it, we're gonna finish them. They're doing wrestling and this and that and fighting the bears and all these kind of things, and this one's like cutting their own thing. And this one's from a woman come in the army. I can do it if you can do it. Unbelievable. So it's a double-edged sword, actually. The LGBT thing is good in a way because it's destroying the armies of the colonizer. It's weakening them. So long as we're not affected, you know, they say, Robert Greene, many people have said this, in fact, even Sun Tzu. Do not disturb your enemy when he's making a mistake. Look, if there was no Muslim communities in the West, if the West didn't have the hegemony, I'll just say, shut your mouth, just leave them. Please. I might even wear rainbow flags. I'm only kidding. I wouldn't do this. I would never do this. Astaghfirullah. But you know what I mean? You leave them. The colonizer wants to cut the genitalia and put the women on the front lines and put compose the police forces. I saw a video on Twitter the other day of a woman trying to stop a man criminal. And he was a drunkard. I'm not sure if you've seen this. And it was in the UK. And she couldn't do it. And he was weak and flimsy and drunk. Like if someone just done that, he would have fallen on the floor. And she was trying her best and whatever. And this is not the place for you, sorry to say. This is not the place for you. I was walking in my area in West London in England. And I saw a female officer. And she actually tried to stop me and speak to me. I said to her, listen, you on a £38,000 salary, yeah, sterling. I know and you know you wouldn't risk your life for what they're doing in there. If a man brought out a Rambo knife and tried to stab another man, would you actually risk your life? She looked at me and she knew and I knew what the answer to that question was. They're destroying. It's inefficient. But of course, they're going to have a response. So let me tell you what the response is. The response is the following. They say, listen, how can you remove half of the workforce from an economy? That's the response. They're going to say, we have women working. That increases our taxes. We are able to take money from these. And so it's efficient from an economic perspective. That's why you're finding they'll attribute it. They may even attribute it to the fact that women have been given so-called liberation. The answer to that question is as follows. Tell me the amount of problems that you would get when you don't have nuclear families. It is clear from the data that when you have single parent households, or when you have households where the mother is not present in the house, Wolf Farron wrote a nice book called The Boy Crisis about, and he mentions lots of things about this, for example. But there are lots of things. I've had lots of interviews with demographers and others on this on my channel. You can find it in your own time. But the point is this. It's clear from the data that when you don't have a nuclear family, you have less educational attainment, you have more delinquency, you have more criminality. So, okay, put the woman in the workforce. But now the state is going to have to pay for all of the crime. Now the state is going to have to pay, especially if it's paying already for the medical bills, for the medical bills of the delinquent ones. Now the state is going to have to pay for the psychological traumas that these people are going through and the pathologies which are known by the data is happening. So don't tell me, okay, well, this is going to save us money. It may save you money in the first 10 years, but it will lose you money in the next 20 or 30. And that's what we have seen definitely by the longitudinal data. One of the most important studies that have been done to this effect is Blanche, Flower, and Oswald that was done between 1960 to 1990. And it was the longest longitudinal study that was done of 100,000 women in England and in America. And it was shown conclusively that their mental health degenerated after the passing of equal legislation stuff in America, the legislation in this movement. So it's harmed women as well. So even if you want to argue there'll be a net income, is the harm that the women in your countries are suffering such that 85% of them, according to Sartre magazine, which is a French one magazine, by the way, said that they would, or 83% said they would leave their jobs if they had the chance straight away. They would leave it. In the West, that's what they're saying, they would leave it. In the East and other places, they'll say, I want to go and work. But the Western woman wants to leave, but the other one, she wants to copy. Two different mentalities completely. Is the money worth that depression for the woman? I thought you cared about women. But how is it the case then that all the data shows, and it's called the happy paradox, that women are actually degenerating psychologically because of your policies? You see, when you manipulate the social order of things, the way that Allah and the Messenger has showed us in the Quran, then this is what you get, dysfunctionality. Dysfunctionality. Now it's 8:10. I do want to leave some time for questions and answers because we've got another kind of 45 minutes to 50 minutes to speak and engage you guys. So with that, I will conclude. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.